Welcome back to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparable's only podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am Scott McNulty, and joined, as always, by Mr. Jason Snell. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Scott.
Target Philadelphia. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Target San Francisco. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling sad because I just watched, as did Jason. Recently, I don't know when Jason watched it, but I literally just watched the final episode of the third season of Star Trek Picard.
Yeah.
The Last Generation, which one assumes is the final episode of Star Trek Picard ever.
Ever. Yep. Series finale.
I'm pretty sure it's probably the last time we will see Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard on the screen, but maybe, who knows? And I'm feeling sad mm-hmm. because the journey is over, Jason.
Yes.
But I'm feeling satisfied by the ending. And emotionally satisfied by the ending. And I feel like Terry Metalis set out to give these characters a send-off, and I believe he gave them an appropriate send-off. What do you think, Jason?
I agree. I want to take you back to the interesting discussion that we had at the very end of last week's episode for those who shy away from the conspiracy phaser and all of our theorizing at the end. And I know there are some people out there. Scott asked me the perplexing question, do you think Picard is going to die at the end of this episode? And what I said, and I was thinking about it the whole time I watched it, what I said was, I think that would be very interesting, but I don't think that's what this show is trying to do. I don't think that's what its vibe is. I think it wants us to have a happy ending for the Next Generation crew. And that was right. You agreed with me. I think we both sensed mm-hmm. that the goal here was, as you just said, Terry Metalis' goal is to give them the satisfying ending that all good things gave them, but that Star Trek Nemesis didn't, took
so
away.
Much.
And yes. And you don't do that by, Geordi loses an arm and Picard is dead at the end and Riker is, badly burned. And you don't mm-hmm. do that.
Worf
you do
is it. Bleeding out on a Borg
yeah.
cube.
I mean, they did shoot Worf a couple of times. So that was something. But again, all he did was snore. Emotionally satisfying is the order of the day. I think everybody mm-hmm. I've talked to about it has sort of agreed that you can quibble with some of the plot stuff. I think that that's perfectly fair. It's Star Trek.
Sure.
But the goal ultimately is make a satisfying bit of television that is dealing with these characters that we've seen for years and giving them kind of it's nice to see them again. And also, if this is the last time we see them, we get to see their sort of last hurrah and leave them in a fun, nice place. And it did all of those things. And thematically, you and I agreed last week, and I stand by it, that... I know some people out there, some of our friends, like our friend Joe Steele, bored with the Borg. And I get that Star Trek Picard has sort of been about the Borg in a different way every season. But mm-hmm. I think you can't not have it be the Borg. I think you can't have, if you're really trying to bring the Next Generation story to a satisfying conclusion, having the final big bad at the end of it all be a random, it'd be Armus or the conspiracy worms, or honestly, the changelings from a different Star Trek show.
Deep Space Nine.
I don't think you could do that. They did. I mean, the Borg are in the bad state they're in because of an episode mm-hmm. of Star Trek Voyager, which
Voyager.
I think is interesting. Mm-hmm. But still, thematically, this is Star Trek Picard, one, and two, the greatest enemy the Next Generation ever faced. Of course it's going to be the Borg at the end. I feel like mm-hmm. I get why people might be a little frustrated, but it had to be this way. It really did, I think.
Well, and one of the constant themes of Jean-Luc Picard is kind of his struggle with making connections, right? And I think that was very interesting. I had never made the connection, between the Borg and how it's kind of, an instant family and, one, you get instant belonging and you're part of the collective. And there's just an interesting twist to find that's due to the actions of Starfleet. Both these changelings are not so happy, and the Borg Queen is dying alone, watching her family die
right.
around her. Now, I have very little sympathy for the Borg,
exactly.
but it is still an interesting setup for it. And then tying that in with Picard and, you know, Jack and all that, I think it made sense to me emotionally. And you might think, well, how is the Borg Queen running this giant cube and all this stuff? I understand that you can quibble about that, but you know what? I don't care.
I don't. And you know, you can quibble if you want to. I saw a funny thing today where Terry Metalis was interviewed about this a little bit and said something about how, you know, if somebody's got a photograph or somebody on a wall or somebody reminisces about something, all the nerds on the internet get really angry with you and say, this is all just fan service. And he's like, if you are hanging around with somebody who you've known for 30 years, do you not bring up old times? Do you not have pictures of your family on the walls? Like, these are things that actually happen in life. And I had that same thought about the nitpickers. It's like, you can nitpick, and you know, and I get, like, not everything has an explanation, but that's the thing. If you want a show where everything's got an explanation, I don't know. You're deluded because you don't, because the explanations are boring. and like, people are like, oh, why would they do formation mode for Starfleet? That's really stupid. My answer is because the changelings infiltrated and made them do stupid things. Okay. Right. Like, what about this? I saw one today in our Slack, our membership Slack, that was, what about the speed of light? Shouldn't it have taken longer for the signal from Jupiter to be cut off back at Earth? And my answer, only somewhat sarcastically, was something, something, transwarp something, right? Like, yeah. You know, oh, but mental, like, again, first off, it's totally made up and it could be whatever they want. And second, it's kind of not the point. And so... Again, it's one of those things where I can come up with reasons for it, but the reasons are boring and it doesn't matter because it's telling you the story that's supposed to be emotionally fulfilling. Like, I like how simple the plot resolution was in this episode. I have one complaint. My one complaint is I don't like the fact that when the signal got cut off, everybody's little Borg bits all just sort of receded and then they looked normal again. I kind of wanted them that to be like implied that they were, I wanted them to like pass out and they're breathing or something like that, and not for them to just sort of magically go back to being fine. Because I think the whole lesson of Locutus is they are not fine. They should not be fine. This is a bad thing that just happened to all of these people and there are going to be ramifications. I thought they made that a little easy. But in terms of like, hey, they got the Enterprise D, they got to fly into a Borg ship like in Return of the Jedi and blow stuff up and fly around and beam people out at the last minute, and it's Riker's final telepathic connection to Deanna that allows her to understand where they are so that they can find them, and so love conquers all in the end. Like, yes. Twice. Yes, it doesn't need to be more complicated. And what's the Borg Queen's big plan? Well, we saw it last week. Her big plan is, wahaha, I had to eat all of my babies, so now I'm going to make new babies out of Starfleet. Ha. Mm-hmm. Like, does it need to be more than that? I don't think it does. I really don't.
Well, and it's so I will say that people can enjoy things in different ways.
Of course.
That's fine. But I will also say
choose not to enjoy them.
I believe, Jason, I am perplexed, I must admit, by people who continue to watch things that they don't seem to enjoy.
I agree.
Only to spew and share how much they don't enjoy it. But then I can only assume that they are gaining enjoyment from that, and so there you go.
That's true. If you don't like the thing, maybe you've solved hate watching. Now you've explained it to me. Thank you.
Exactly. I don't understand. Just stop. You don't need to watch it. It's fine. Anyway, what I was going to say is that I in fact love the fact that the Borg Queen is just like, Starfleet messed up my entire species, and so now I just want to get revenge.
Yeah.
And I came up with a clever plan.
I'm gonna eat
I found
your
another species
I'm gonna
that
make a
messed up, and we got together, and we're gonna, you know, screw you guys over.
Yeah,
and take your children.
Yeah, I mean, and I get that it actually, what I like about it is the Borg's back is against the wall kind of thing, right? Like, just as one of the things that I thought was the most intriguing in season one, about the idea that they had this Borg artifact, that essentially the Borg are kind of gone. They're out there somewhere, but like, there's like deactivated Borg cubes that we're studying, and like, it's sort of post-Borg, that the Borg might still be a vague threat that's out there, but they're not, like, they're also, we understand them more now, and we've got their wreckage, and they're obviously diminished. And so then in season three, to have this sort of almost zombie-like Borg Borg Queen, who, like, you thought the Borg were zombies before. Wait until they look like zombies too. And so she's at her, you know, it feels very much, and you can do this when it's the last episode of the last season of a show that might even be the last to ever have to deal with this, say the Borg have kind of reached their end. And this is their last desperate move, where she's taking the last of the you know, her energy and trying this last ditch revenge plot. Like, I like that. That's fun, and that's, you know, that's all it really needs to be is that. And the Borg is, again, an emotional connection for all the fans, because it goes back to Best of Both Worlds and it connects with Patrick Stewart's performance throughout after Best of Both Worlds. I mean, yeah, it's just it worked for me. I felt like it had to be this way. I mean, we could talk about, like, Jack in this episode. I thought Jack had, like, a plan. He does not have a plan.
He does not have a plan.
His plan was to go find the Borg Queen and become a Borg, apparently. But even I definitely saw people who were like, oh, it's another scene where everybody's minds connect and they're in a zone somewhere and they're having a conversation. It's like, well, yeah, there's a lot of shows that are doing that sort of thing these days. I get it. But, like, in the end, what's the point of that scene? The point of that scene is not, oh, how did they connect them and depict it, like, just like Data and Lore and all that. The point is that it's Picard and his son talking about emotional connections, and Picard's having it and not having it, and finding his Starfleet family, and Jack pushing people away while also striving for a connection. And, like, that's that. I mean, you don't have to like it, but, like, that, like, I can't help you, right? Like, that. What is this show about if not that?
And one of the things I liked most about that is Jack saying, I always felt different, and it always felt difficult for me to make connections. And now I understand it's because I'm part Borg. And Jean-Luc saying, no, I had that. It's just, you're a human and you have trouble making connections just like your father.
Yep.
It's not your Borg parts have nothing to do with it. There's no science fictional explanation. It's not because of your, you know, your Borg bits. It is
DNA.
Just because you take after your father.
Your actual DNA.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that Picard is introspective enough. Now, I'm fascinated by this, right? Because it's true. I've seen several people writing about Jean-Luc Picard, and they're like, you know, one of the themes of Star Trek has always been, of Next Generation, has always been Picard's lack of, you know, ability to make connections, all that. And I'm like, I don't know if I believe that. I think that Picard was, I think that's us analyzing Picard like a human being, when in fact a lot of that portrayal was literally like, he has to be the captain of the Enterprise on a TV show. And so, and they want him to be a certain way for, like, he never has a relationship because the captain can't have a relationship week to week. He and Crusher can't get together because the producers are like, yeah, but we might want to write an episode where he has a romance on a planet. So no, we won't do that. But the net effect is that Jean-Luc Picard ended up being a character who struggled to make connections. And there was that moment that I think, again, is one of the sparkling moments of Jean-Luc Picard, and it's in the pilot where he says to Riker, I don't understand children, don't let me make an ass of myself with children. That is good stuff. I'm not sure it got better than that in the entire time that he was on the show. But, like, that's taking an adult interpretation of who Jean-Luc Picard must be based on who we saw, like, leads you to this logical place that he, like, from what we saw from season one, he's lonely. He had his career kind of go sideways and thought he could kind of call their bluff, and turns out he's not as legendary and important as he thought. And that that was his family. And when he left Starfleet, he was completely adrift, right? Like, that is what the theme of the show, all three seasons, as disparate as they've been, has been about. So leading to this moment where he can say to Jack, look, I found, when I went to Starfleet, that's when I made my human connections. And that's how I found the people who I consider to be my family. And it's hard, but I did it. And of course, that's all wrapped up in this other, you know, the other thing that's going on here, which is the reunion of the people who love each other, who we love from the crew of the Enterprise. So you get that too.
Yes, and everybody gets to do a thing, right? They all get to use their special abilities, mm-hmm. basically, to help and, you know, get that funny scene with Dr. Crusher suddenly being very adept with weaponry.
It's been 30 years, she says.
It was great.
I've seen a lot of stuff, okay?
Like, yeesh.
Yeah, so good. So good. Yeah, Beverly gets that moment.
It is good. Trust his gut.
Right? Right. Good data stuff. I really love what Brent Spiner has done with sort of actual human data as opposed to what he was playing in the movies, which was data with an emotion chip, which is a little bit different than this is like actual human data. Like what if data has access to everything? But it's still data, still the same guy. He's just got all that. And he played that really well. Geordi gets to run the ship. I thought that was appropriate since he's like a Commodore or something. There's like,
and he built it.
Yeah. And he, right. You built it. So if it breaks, it's, you know, you did.
That's
it.
Right.
You did it.
He will need to tell Starfleet if they wreck the Enterprise D. But luckily Tuvok later. Oh, by the way, Tuvok is fine.
Yeah, he's fine. So he was in
don't worry.
Dungeon
you're
somewhere.
All fine. Yeah. Which also, I'm glad that they told us Tuvok was fine, because I was worried once we saw fake Tuvok. I was like, well, what happened to real Tuvok? You can't do
exactly.
this to us.
He's fine.
TV show.
He's fine.
He's fine.
Yeah. I had one... Another thing that bugged me about this episode, which I liked very much, is, I don't know, like, every time you go down somewhere on a mission, you could die. It didn't feel to me... like this one was the one they knew they weren't coming back from. And yet that's how they treated it. And of course, then they didn't. They came back. It wasn't. So I just had that moment where it was like, this doesn't feel quite suicide missiony to me, but they are treating it like a suicide mission. It amped up the emotion, but I was not, I don't know. It that part rang a little, felt a little false to me. Like, now you're saying your goodbyes. It's like, do you go down to a planet, do you say, it's everybody before I go, it's been an honor serving with you, now I'm going to go down and meet the ambassador? It's like, no, you don't. This
well, yeah, but they're not beaming down to meet an ambassador.
That's
Jason.
True.
They're beaming over the to Borg a giant queen. Mysterious Borg cube to figure out what's going on.
They've been
and,
there before, more than once.
Yeah, but look, Jonathan Frakes, 70 years old.
All right, okay.
Patrick Stewart's what, 82?
Yeah. Yep.
Michael Dorn. I don't know how old Michael Dorn is. I have to Google. Google will tell me right now that Michael Dorn is also 70 years old.
Yeah. So I will say this, Scott. I was laughing while I watched this episode at how much more effective they are in that moment where he says goodbye to Worf and Riker and says, I'm going to go meet the Borg Queen. And he takes his little walk away. And I thought, see, this is very dramatic and exciting. And I was taken back to the finale last season where there was that chase where a group of trained mercenaries very, very slowly chase an elderly man through the basement of a haunted house. Not so good. This is much more effective use of the fact that Patrick Stewart's 82 and he's not going to be an action hero for you.
He's not going to run down that hallway.
No.
He will walk down that hallway. So know what you have to deal with.
Yeah, he's just going to amble down to
that's
the
right. He will emote.
He will.
Like a 30-year-old, but he will not walk like one.
He's not going to go down. He's not going to climb those stairs. Okay.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
No.
And that's okay.
And I think that's another thing that this show, this season did right, is understand that these characters have aged and they have changed and they know that they have aged and changed and their relationships have changed and the actors who play the characters know that they have aged, right? So it's much like, you know, Star Trek. Two or four and all of those when Captain Kirk is like, gee, I'm really old nowadays.
50.
Put him out to pasture. You just have to understand what you're doing, and this is not to say that season one or two season two I would question if it really understood what it was trying to do, but season one certainly had a viewpoint and knew it was trying to tell a very different story. It was in fact trying to not tell this story.
Exactly.
So mission accomplished. And so I just think that season three had a very clear focus, and it's still, one could argue, I suppose, the word fan service people bandy about. And I don't really know. Everyone has their own definition of fan service, but I tend to... I'm a fan. I like to be serviced.
Yep.
It's just you have to just avoid the pandering. That's where I don't want to be pandered to, right. But I do want to see the things I like.
Yeah, right. I mean, fan service is a term that, yeah, I think it's lost all meaning at this point. I think there are, the way I always put it is, there's the stuff that matters to the story and the stuff that doesn't matter to the story. And the stuff that doesn't matter to the story, if it gets in your way and gets in the way of the story, it's bad. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, then it's fine. And I guess I would also say, if you're really hoping for people to watch it who don't know all your references, it should not confuse them. It should not get in their right. way. But that's sort of how I feel. And like, we are, the whole exercise of this season is a Next Generation reunion. Like, they had to sneak it past Patrick Stewart, who didn't want to do a Next Generation reunion until like 25 episodes into his 30 episodes, when finally they were like, okay, now everybody's back. It was too late for him to stop. So they did it. That's the whole point of what we're doing here. So it was an engaging story. Was it the most engaging plot ever? No, it's something sort of familiar. But again, the point is that it is familiar and that we want to see these characters and we want to see how they're interacting and things like Tuvok showing up, right? Like, it's fan service, but like, he also had there was a purpose in him being there.
But it makes sense.
And so it's okay with me. What are we doing here, right? Like, I try to imagine what a season with the entire cast of Star Trek The Next Generation that was not interested in any nostalgia of any kind whatsoever. First off, other than the fact that you were bringing the people back, what would that even be like? And the answer is either nonsensical or just like utterly unappealing and a failure at what it was trying to do. Because that's like, why are we even here? Like, why are you watching Picard season 3 otherwise? If not because you're a fan and you want to have kind of warm feelings about these characters. Yeah,
exactly. And you people would just then complain about them misusing the characters and squandering the opportunity because they didn't do like none of like they just spend 10 episodes on, you know, in Chateau Picard.
I was going to say like season 2 of Picard. But anyway,
season 2 of Picard had some high moments.
It really did. I think you're right, it didn't really know what it wanted to do and didn't have a plan. But,
they were like, I don't know what to do with this. Yeah. But and they had some other, it was a troubled production, I think. But and I will say, so go back to the fan service part, the one thing that almost made me roll my eyes but didn't, because I knew the layers of fan service, is the president of the Federation being Anton Chekhov, clearly Pavel Chekhov's son. Because he basically says that.
Yes.
And so I thought to myself, oh, come on, does every single kind of important character need to be related to a character we already knew? But then I realized that it was also kind of a monument to the actor who played Chekhov in
the J.J. Abrams. Yes, it was a tribute to Anton Yelchin, who died, who was Chekhov in the J.J. Abrams movies. And they had Walter Koenig come back and read that dialogue the only part about it that made me roll my eyes, and I know why they did it, but it's like, as my father once said, and it's like, oh yes, your father, who was probably Pavel Chekhov, because we don't want to confuse people. They didn't get the name wrong. Could it be his grandfather? I don't know. We're not going to talk about it, but like I appreciate somewhere in one of his interviews today, Terry Metalis said he wanted to do a tip of the hat to the original Star Trek and have one of those actors appear in some form, and so that was what they did, is they had him do that. But yeah, I think in the end, well, it's Anton Chekhov. It's like the playwright, but it's not. It's like Anton Yelchin, and that's sweet. And that was totally unnecessary. And yet, what they were really just trying to do is the purpose of that is that it's the Star Trek IV thing, right? It's the General Order, whatever. Don't come to Earth. It's very bad here.
Please
to get
turn
out.
Around.
Yeah.
So I liked. I mean, I liked it all, and it was. Like if they had him on the view screen and he was like, that would have been too much, but they did it just enough that it avoided my near eye rolling. I did not roll my eyes, but I almost did. But they turned me around on it.
Yeah, it was. And I liked the fact that, Seven and Rafi do have something to do, that they have their little little subplot where they realize they can activate. And again, this is one of those nitpicking things where people are like, well, why is it that the fleet formation thing doesn't work? Is it line of sight? Is it visual? It's like, look.
Apparently, yes.
Suffice it to say that if you turn on a cloaking device, it breaks the thing. Like, do we need to get into it? Like, it's a clever little thing where they're like, oh, we have a cloaking device. And it leads to that great moment where you see the Borgified crew break out. And you're like, uh-oh, they're coming to the bridge. It's like, no. They're going to the cloaking device so they can blow it up. Sense. That was all, you know, and they're it's like, you know, rousing speech. We're getting the Seven is a good captain after all, and we're going to try to do this. And I'm not asking you to sacrifice your lives. I'm asking you to give everything you've got for what you believe in, and that sort of thing. Like, it was all, I like that they did that, because last week I was sort of saying, what do those characters do next week?
Why are they there?
Here is the answer, which is sort of, you know, dramatic things that maybe didn't have much of an impact, but still were still good for characters.
They're still there.
Stuff. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And they are standing in for all the other Starfleet crew members on all those ships that are fighting back, right? And the whole point, you know, many themes of Star Trek are, you know, one of the biggest themes, and we talked about this last week, is self-sacrifice, right? And the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And another one of them is that, you know, there is no such thing as a hopeless situation, and you never give up and all these things. So one imagines on all of those ships, there were people fighting to the very end to avoid having, you know, all the ships target every major population center on Earth and destroy them. Like, that's a big deal. So I liked that we could see our friends fighting back and trying to do, even though they knew it was a hopeless situation, and that guy who rather be working at his parents' deli is like, I took like one training course on this. But even then he's like, yes, I know, we have to do it.
Right. And I saw somebody say, well, why doesn't Seven or Rafi steer the ship? It's like, I mean, the point is that this guy has it in him and he just needs the confidence, and he needs a good leadership to say, you can do this. Mm-hmm.
And that's to show us that Seven is the leader who can recognize these things and inspire her people to do things.
And if he crashed the ship, if he was like, oh, this isn't like cutting salami, then it would be one thing. But no, he does a good job, because he is a trained Starfleet officer, and so it's inspirational. And that was all nice. It's good to see them obviously setting up the thing at the end. I think last week I might have made a joke in passing about how that this episode was probably going to be like Lord of the Rings, where it has like 10 different endings.
It sure did. It does indeed. I will say, I'm going to put a feather in my own cap for having called what I think is the real ending and not the kind of tag, Marvel-esque bonus scene, which is them playing poker around the table. Because how else could it end?
Not only are they playing poker, but the end credits roll over that swirling above shot of them continue to play. It is not only quoting that shot, but then it just keeps going through the credits, which is, I read a interview with Patrick Stewart today, who basically said, we played a game. We just play poker in character as they made that shot. And there are a few moments where, like, Picard deals and it bangs off the chips and goes to the wrong person and they have to pick it up and hand it. It's kind of funny, but you got it. You nailed it. And I thought you could end it right here and it would literally be saying, look, we're just going to go back to the ending that worked. let's just go back to that.
And it was a good ending. We all agree.
It's a great ending. One of five, but it was. I did have that moment where I tapped my little remote to be like, how much longer is this? And I was like, oh, there's 10 minutes of endings here.
Okay. Of endings, yes. We've got a lot of endings, a lot of things to wrap up.
So, Beverly gets promoted to Admiral.
Very nice.
Which is good, because those people need an overhaul, right? Like, obviously, there's a lot of people who need to think about what they did in allowing the changelings to take over and all of that.
And one assumes there are a lot of dead admirals who were replaced with changelings as well.
Yeah.
So
I think they give it a light touch on a 1 year later and all of that. I've got to assume that first off, in all the crews who were fighting, like, I think a lot of people died.
Yes.
And there was a lot of people
having intensive counseling because they have been assimilated.
Exactly. I think Starfleet is in a fragile position, and that's one of the reasons they do the fast forward a year, is they want to kind of get over that hump a little bit. Tuvok doesn't accept Seven's resignation. So Seven resigns because she's like, I'm a bad, I know I went against my captain's orders and all this, and I'm going to save you the trouble. And then Tuvok says, why don't you play this hologram of Shaw giving you your personnel review before you left and then betrayed him? And so we get Shaw one last time observing. I love it because it's the, so she doesn't go by the book. Maybe we need to rewrite the book. She's rewriting the book. It's like there's That's no right. rule against it. And if there is, we should throw that rule out because she knows better rules. Like, I loved it. It was great. It was great
to
see.
There are literally like 18 rules against it.
Yeah. So Todd Stashwick gets one last bow and it's really just like, you should promote her to captain. She's great. She bugs the crap out of me, but I'm old school. She's going to do great. And it's such a great moment, Jerry Ryan. That was one of my two almost tearing up moments in this episode. And Jerry Ryan gets the tear and it lets us mourn for Shaw because he's like, oh, he wasn't that bad a guy. And we already knew he wasn't because we've been saying he was right all along.
Pretty much the entire time.
So,
yes.
And if they do a sequel to this series at some point, I'm assuming that there's going to be that moment where they're either going to be like, oh, that was a changeling. We found Shaw. He was in a dungeon next to Tuvok. He's
fine. There was that line.
Right. Or it'll be like Q saying, you guys need some adult supervision on this ship. I'm going to bring Shaw back. I'm like, no. But either way, it was great to see Captain Shaw one last time. And Seven gets that kind of endorsement, isn't it fun? Just think about it for a minute. Isn't it funny? Like Seven of Nine, Star Trek Voyager character, gets introduced in mid-season of season one, kind of hangs around for most of the rest of the season, becomes a regular, like amid all the TNG reunion festivities, Star Trek Picard is also like literally let us pluck the best character from Star Trek Voyager and make her the star essentially. I'm fascinated by that Jerry Ryan and Seven of Nine, like that part of this, and the character didn't need rehab or something, but it's like that character got dusted off and elevated in Star Trek Picard so much. It's great to see. Absolutely deserved, but it is funny to stop and think, wait, isn't this a Next Generation thing? And the answer is yes, but also Seven of Nine.
Well, and I mean, because Seven of Nine and Picard share this
Borg
huge
thematic
thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so it just makes, she's the perfect character. And plus, she's a great character. She's one of Star Trek's best characters. Period. So absolutely, bringing her back made a whole lot of sense. And Jerry Ryan does a fantastic job. And so, I'm sure they appreciated that in the first season. And we're like, well,
Jerry Ryan, and my two favorite things in terms of like surprises while watching Star Trek Picard. One is Jerry Ryan, who I haven't seen in a lot of stuff lately. She's great. I mean, I could say overall, older actors don't get opportunities, right?
True.
And so when you especially see women. An older actor, then you're like, wow, they're really good. But they almost never get the chance unless it's like, let's make a cameo, or, you know, because we remember you from back when, or let's do a reunion kind of thing. But Jerry Ryan especially, so good. And the show is basically saying, could she be the captain in charge of a Star Trek show? Yes, she could.
Yes.
And then I would say Jonathan Frakes as well, who basically retired from acting to be a TV director. Like, I thought he was great this whole season. I thought he was, his Riker was like super charismatic and totally believable as a veteran starship captain. And I thought he was fantastic too. So like, let's hear it for the actors playing characters that it could just be like a drive-by. And instead, both of them really impressed me as being like, they could do this season after season and they'd be great at it.
I agree. And I hope, I mean, it is clear if you do not read Terry Metalis's tweets, it is clear from the end of Picard season 3, this episode, that he really, really, really would like them to have another show set on the Enterprise G with Seven of Nine at the helm and the characters that we've established in this episode to carry on the legacy.
The G stands for generation.
that's right.
So I wanted to ask you if you had the same thought I did, which is the other moment, my other teary moment actually was me assuming the show was going to do something that it then didn't do. Because I appreciate that ending. I appreciate them saying, look, there's a new Enterprise, and it's the it's the refit Titan, but it's now the Enterprise. And Seven's in charge, and Raffi is there, and Jack is there, and Geordi's daughter is there, and who knows what adventures they're gonna have. And we get that tag at the end with Q saying, "Oh no, now I test you, Jack Crusher," right? All that, which is fine. I thought that was fun because it's again just after they call back to All Good Things, they call back to Encounter at Farpoint. I like it works. It's the whole sandwich there. It's great. And so I love the optimism of saying Star Trek goes on and the voyages of the Starship Enterprise go on with a new literally the next generation. Great. Mm-hmm. However, when I think about Star Trek Picard, and I think about this being probably the last time we see Patrick Stewart as Picard, and this is the big farewell, there's that moment where they're in the shuttle and Jack and Beverly and Jean-Luc are going to the ship and they're like, "Oh, what's the name?" And they're like, "Well, we didn't want to tell you because we wanted it to be a surprise." And I thought to myself, and this is when I started tearing up, I was like, "It's the USS Jean-Luc Picard." And then it's not. It's the Enterprise G. And I'm like, I guess that's okay. But I actually kind of think thematically having a ship named after Picard as the, your career is over, you've passed the torch, you are now one of the names on the ship instead of being a captain or an admiral. Did that ever occur to you? Because I'm sitting there thinking, I know why they didn't do it, and yet maybe that would have been the right move to have it be names don't matter, but we named a ship after you. I don't know, for the last episode of Star Trek Picard.
It did not occur to me, although I think if it were to have happened, it would have made sense, but I think it would have made the next show a little awkward.
Well, yeah. Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. I understand why you want to set up the next show, but at the same time, I think that maybe you could have not, and it would have worked better as the finale of Star Trek Picard. But I get the idea, which is the point is the next generation takes over. It goes on and on and on. The human adventure is just beginning, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Right. I get it. And yet, I don't know, opportunity missed. That would have been a beautiful moment to be like saying goodbye to Picard and to Patrick Stewart by saying they named the ship after you. Your son is on is the one named after you.
They could have, the Seven does say this is just a test run. So they could have just then if they have, you know, Star Trek Legacy or whatever the show is that they might have based on this. Guess what? The first episode they're on, they explain, "Oh, we got rid of the Picard. Now we're on the Enterprise."
I'll guarantee you, if there's ever a Star Trek Legacy show, if there's ever a show that follows up on that last scene, that the ship's not going to look the same. Right, they're going to design a new hero ship for you. It's not going to be the sort of weird redesign of the Titan into the Neo Constitution class. No, they'll design a new ship, and then they'll have to explain it. They'll have to be like, "Oh, well, you know,
refit.
It's still the Enterprise G, but it's refitted or whatever." Like, and I don't know. Anyway, just a thought. I just wanted to put it out there. It's a thought that occurred to me is that the most emotionally moving thing in that scene would have been for them to come up above the saucer and have it be revealed that it's the USS Picard. However, this is also a franchise and they want to point the way forward for the franchise. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's just Terry Metalis saying, "Please give me a job running the next show." I do also think it's just a nod to the fact that Star Trek goes on and, and there will always be, you know, just as these people are old and are going off on their own, we have a new generation of people who are out doing what they did when we were all a lot younger. And that's beautiful in its own way, but not quite as moving, I think, as what I was thinking they were going to do. So, yeah, it's fine. I get it. It's probably more appropriate to Star Trek, even if it's a little... That's part of the problem, right, Scott, is that Star Trek Picard isn't just a 3-season show about a guy who goes to space, right? It's not. It's part of a big franchise and a relaunch of the franchise and memories of the old shows that were on the franchise 30 years ago. And, like, it's a lot of stuff. It's not just one single thematic thing.
And these are beloved characters, and and the ships themselves are also beloved characters, and then the very name, the Enterprise, right, is a beloved thing. So there's a lot of weight here. But I do think that you're right. It would have been, well, much like, you know, they chose not to kill Picard.
That yeah,
could
that's
have also
true.
Been a big move there. The so, but Marisa, my lovely wife, was watching it with me. And about, there was a point at which she turned to me and said, are they going to kill all of them? And I said, I don't think so. That would be kind of a bummer.
They could. I mean, no, it really is like, we want to make them plausibly in jeopardy enough for it to be an adventure show, while also, yeah, they're not going to do
no,
that.
They're right? fine.
And that's
they're
fine.
Be fine.
That's fine. I mean, they could have, but that's not why we're here. We're not here to make everybody sad. We're here to make everybody happy. And
right.
to say goodbye to some old friends. That's why we're here, for sure.
And so the final ending is Jack getting settled into his, and you've already mentioned this, getting settled into his room on the Enterprise G. And who is there but good old Q? And he says, Marisa turned to me and said, I thought Q was dead. And then 2 seconds after that, Jack said, I thought you were dead.
And I like that waving away. He was like, oh, humans, nonlinear or something. He was like, yeah.
I'm Q. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
I told your dad I was dying, and then I came forward to here, and I'm bugging you, and then I'll go back and die later. Like
he's
nonlinear.
Time works differently. So, yeah, and I am an avowed Q lover, so I enjoyed seeing... Yes, I am a Q-tip. So I enjoy anytime John Delancey shows up to look mm-hmm. mysterious and wear Q-like clothes
yes.
from Encounter at Farpoint. I'm here for it. So I enjoyed that and him saying, Jack being like, but you told my dad the trial was over. And Q is like, yeah, his is over, but you're new.
Right. And that fits the theme, right, which is that... It's not the end of an era. I mean, it's the end of the era, but it's not the end of the story because the baton is always passed and the adventure continues. Just as the original series passed the baton to the next generation, they passed the baton. And that's a beautiful thing of the Q thing showing up there is that's the theme, right? Which is mm-hmm. the test of humanity and, you know, why are we here and what are we doing goes on. It goes on forever until there are no humans left. It goes on. And like, that's Star Trek.
Exactly.
That's the whole message. Yeah. I thought that was really well done. Like again, for the 8 endings that are here, I think they're all good. I think they're all good,
yes.
earned, thematically mm-hmm. appropriate endings. I really do. Even Q.
Yeah. And even Q, and you are not a Q-tip.
I like Q in small doses. I think that they overused him a little bit in TNG, but yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. A Cupid episode, I don't like that episode.
Oh, you don't like Cupid.
Anyway,
well,
it's fine. But then Tapestry. So, you know.
Tapestry. Oh, excellent episode.
The best.
And so, yeah, there you go. Is there anything else you would like to talk about from season 3, episode 10?
Oh.
Other than, I kind of wish Guinan, Whoopi Goldberg, showed
yeah.
up just because they mention her. So.
She was there in season 2, which they shot back to back with this. And for whatever reason, they didn't get her, couldn't afford her, whatever. There was, as I've been saying all along, I read a few articles today about this season. And one of the things that, that Terry Metalis said, the showrunner, was that in his initial script for this, they had Guinan and they had Harry Kim and they had Janeway and they had lots of stuff in there. And people are like, this is too many characters and cameos and we can't you got to cut it back. You got to cut it back. And Janeway was already in Prodigy. So they're like, okay. Like I still feel like I appreciate, and we don't know behind the scenes, it may have also been availability issues, but like, it's nice to see Tim Russ to know that Tuvok's okay, but that would have been the perfect scene for Janeway to be.
Yes.
And say, Seven, you absolutely have earned this.
And of course, and Seven, yeah. Janeway's relationship, one of the best relationships in Star Trek.
Exactly.
So
that's, I do feel like you end up with all these things that are, from Terry Metalis' perspective, these are the toys that remain in the toy box. And whoever, mm-hmm. whether it's Terry Metalis or somebody else, whoever picks up, and it feels like it's going to happen, but who knows when, since they've announced this Starfleet Academy show and Strange New Worlds is still going, and are they going to do a third live action show at all or not? They've got
the movie.
They've got that movie with Giorgio that they announced. So who knows when, but like assuming they come back to this time frame, which you and I've talked about being feels like the like real Star Trek time frame, current present day Star Trek, all those toys remain, right? Like Janeway is still there. Deep Space Nine is still there, right? Like if I was doing a TV show, a Star Trek Legacy TV show, like you absolutely would try to get like Kira back and you would try to follow up with some of the characters from Voyager. Like all of that stuff is still there, but they couldn't pack it all in here, even though it's kind of too bad because some of it really would have fit. But I get it. I get that there was just it was a lot. I mean it was already a lot.
Yes, what we saw was a lot, and I can only imagine that there was even more.
Yeah.
And that's the I feel like when you get someone. So at a certain point, the people who watch these shows then become the people who make these shows, right? And so, and I don't know, it is to an avid watcher, there is some kind of like a, I don't, ineffable change, right? Because you feel like the people, like I love TNG, but the people who were writing TNG generally weren't like crazy about Star Trek, right?
Certainly at the beginning. Like, I think Brandon Braga and Ron Moore were huge Star Trek fans. I know Ron Moore was a huge Star Trek original series fan. Mm-hmm. But TNG was also not the original series. And so, like, Ron Moore, the places where you saw Ron Moore's fandom is like his writing about the Klingons and stuff, because he was super into the Klingons and they had him write for the Klingons. But and Terry Metalis, although he was a writing assistant or something on Enterprise, so he has worked professionally here, you know, it does feel like the people writing this show were people who, and some of the actors too, were fans of these characters, like literally these characters, whereas the Next Generation writers were fans of Star Trek, but like TOS and TNG are so different that it doesn't, I mean, you could be a fan of Star Trek, but it's not like you're writing for Captain Kirk. You're writing for Jean-Luc Picard. It's a very different kind of thing. But yeah, you wait long enough and all of the writers are fans. And it is different, right? Like Gene Kuhn was not a fan of Star Trek. It was his job. And so he invented it. And Dorothy Fontana, not a fan of Star Trek, a professional person who wrote about Star Trek.
Who made Star Trek.
Who made Star Trek. But they... a lot of these shows now are not staffed by people who could not care less about Star Trek, right? They're run by people who love Star Trek. And there is a danger. I mean, this is the same conversation we had starting in 2005 about Doctor Who, where the people who took over Doctor Who were Doctor Who fans, lifelong Doctor Who fans. And like I've seen a couple articles today talking about the Picard season 3 finale, talking about, you know, it feels like fan fiction. And it's like, well, what's fan fiction? If you mean it's stories written by people who are a fan of the material,
Yes.
Yeah, they are, because that's who's writing this stuff. And, you know, I wouldn't want every, I don't know, fan fiction should not be a pejorative, for one.
True.
And two, it's not like, I mean, these are people who are professional television writers who also love Star Trek and got a chance to write for Star Trek. And I think that's fine. I'm not sure I actually would want to see a show about a beloved thing that was written by somebody who didn't care about it. I mean, like, it would be interesting, but I would be a little concerned, maybe, right? Like, that this is Star Trek written by people who don't care about Star Trek. Well, what would that... That's the Quentin Tarantino's Star Trek movie, right? It's like, I don't think I want to see it. And now it doesn't exist, but, like, I don't think I want to see it. Although, I guess he does care about Star Trek. You know what I mean, though? It's like the corporate... We got a corporate extrusion of somebody who doesn't care, but we're going to have them write a Star Trek thing for you. It's like, well, no. I don't want that.
Well, so I think that sometimes that can, it's a balance, because sometimes that can get new interesting things, right? Because Star Trek II was famously
good example done by Nicholas people who Meyer, didn't care about Star
they
Trek.
Didn't care about Star Trek at all. They were like, you want us to shoot a movie? We'll shoot a movie. Mm-hmm. And they shot, I would argue, the best Star Trek movie ever made
for sure.
And So you can get that, but you're right that if it's just like, oh, I need a paycheck, and so I am a TV writer and I am writing this show, and there are, I think, many original series episodes that fit this bill of mm-hmm. a TV writer who needed a job and so wrote an episode of the original series, and it's not great.
Yeah, you got to get it right. I mean, that's the thing mm-hmm. about Harve Bennett and Nicholas Meyer. Is they in the end they got Star Trek right? Like they right. ironically they, fans, they got it more than doing. Gene Roddenberry got it.
Yes. Well, and they understand the basics of story, like you need tension and yeah. conflict and all this stuff. So,
right.
And I think as long as you are professional and you get those things, things are going well. And on the opposite side, you get the problem. And this we talked about this like. A million years ago, when Discovery came about, and I said that what I didn't want was a nostalgia bomb, right? Of
right.
just people saying, hey, you like Jean-Luc Picard. Remember his fish? Here it is. And remember
that's right. The Fish Chronicles. That whole episode where his fish got lost and they had to find it. Wow.
Yes. And so, and I feel like there's a danger there when you have these super fans who are totally into it and
agreed.
Just want to go down these rabbit holes mm-hmm. of things they've always thought about and are rightfully, like if Paramount was super desperate and for some reason called me
right.
and said, hey, Scott, we need you to write an episode of Star Trek. I would say yes.
Of course.
And I would write probably an awful episode of Star Trek, but I would have a wonderful time doing it. And I would, you know, Reginald Barkley would be the hero. Mm-hmm. It would make no sense, but I would do all the things that I am obsessed about with Star Trek and put it in there. And so you need to find a balance because at the end of the day,
yes.
it does need to be entertaining, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't want to come across as saying that you need to be a fan. Nor am I saying yeah. that the fans are the ones who can do, they can do no wrong, because I think I think you can do it badly. You can be a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'll take you back to Doctor Who. Like there are plenty of examples of good and bad in the new Doctor Who based on, I think, decisions made by fans who are also writers, but also good decisions because they got it. And like when it's magical, it's you get why people yep. love this. And mm-hmm. the thing you're creating is the thing people love. I think where it gets hollow is the thing you're creating is playing the hits,
right.
playing
you're
the
mining.
Old things. I'm pushing the buttons that make you remember when you felt good about this,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to saying, I get why people watch Star Trek. Now here's my Star Trek that's going to give people what they want in terms of Star Trek. That's not the same as saying, what if we meet the Temerians again? Because people like Darmok. So let's just do Darmok again. That's mm-hmm. not going to work, right? Like you need it to be like, you need to get why people love Star Trek. And that's why, I mean, just to, as we're kind of coming to the end of this, unless we're going to enter into our second hour of, anyway, Terry Metalis, in the end, I'm going to give him a big thumbs up. I don't think what he did was perfect, but I think that he brought his knowledge as a showrunner, a TV writer, a professional. He did, 12 Monkeys before he did this. And his love of Star Trek and his love, I think, of Star Trek, The Next Generation in particular,
mm-hmm.
and made something that was good, that served the fans, but was also fun and good television and good Star Trek, I would argue. So while it wasn't perfect, I would say, I think he did a pretty good job. I think the season is cohesive. I think that the fact that he's out on Twitter telling everybody that they need to do fan campaigns to have him come back and do a show suggests to me very strongly that he's not coming back to do a show.
Oh.
But I would say I think he did the job, and I think he did it well. And that's not what I would say about the people who were the prime movers on season two, like Akiva Goldsman.
They did the job.
But I think that Terry Metalis really did a laudable job here of making a good ending for TNG and a very watchable 10 episodes. And if somebody was hiring a showrunner for another show in this time frame, I would say give, you should talk to Terry Metalis, because he did it. He did a good job. And then I think there's, I feel like there's something here, just like we all knew there was something there for Strange New Worlds in Discovery Season 2. I feel, I have a very similar, I mean, not, I don't want to say that they built the sets, Scott, but they totally built the sets.
they literally built the sets as well.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. And as I was thinking about, since this is, I believe, the final season of Star Trek Picard,
yes,
that we will ever see. It makes me think about the previous seasons of Star Trek Picard and kind of how I came to them and judged them in different ways, right? Because I know the first season of Star Trek Picard, I took very differently because I knew they were, they basically said, you're not getting a TNG reunion. We're trying something different. We're exploring, you know, Jean-Luc Picard's character. Don't expect, you know, all your friends to show up. And then some of them did, but that was fine. So I judged that show very differently than I did the second season, because it was all about Q, or was it? It wasn't really, but it was in my mind, it should have been. And I felt like they wasted it. So that made me judge it a little more harshly. And the third season, I knew, obviously, that it was all about TNG and this big reunion. In my mind, made it the job much harder to accomplish, right? Because I know these characters. And if it's just 10, you know, 10 episodes of them doing things that I don't think they would do, I would be a grumpy person. But it wasn't. I think it exceeded my expectations. It surprised me in some ways. It did exactly what I wanted to do in other ways. And I thoroughly enjoyed it from start to finish. So I say, kudos to them for doing a very difficult thing, I think.
Yes.
And doing it very well.
Yeah. I mean, it was a fun ride. The actors, I think, acquitted themselves well. I think the writing was pretty good. I think that the look of it was great. I think it really did look and feel like a Star Trek movie.
Looks like Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. I think very well done. Was it perfect? No. You know,
nothing.
Are there
things, I think it's perfect,
to criticize about it? Yeah, of course, sure. But in the grand scheme of things, especially of modern Star Trek, I think that this is a pretty much a victory. This third season of Picard is up there with the best that modern Star Trek has done. Strange New Worlds season 1, you know, I think is above it. But like, I thought this was really good, and as you said, degree of difficulty here is so high. Also, I just wanted to say, I love how Star Trek really is showing that it can be different things for different people. I know they're working on that. Undoubtedly younger skewing Starfleet Academy show. We've got two animated series. We've got the pre-TOS era Strange New Worlds, and we've got this post-TNG era of Star Trek Picard. Different eras, different characters, different purposes for them. Star Trek has more breadth than I think people give it credit for. And I love that about modern Star Trek, that they have the chance to sort of tell these different stories to different audiences in different ways. And I hope it continues. And I hope we do get a third live action TV series. And I do hope that it's something that is coming after Star Trek Picard, but I guess we'll have to see. Failing that, then maybe there's a lot of room here for whether it's movies or miniseries or stuff based on some of these characters. Like I think you could certainly take some of these classic characters that we've seen in Picard and then put them off in their own little adventures and maybe interact with other characters that we've known and other characters that are new. So yeah, I know that everybody's pulling back on their budgets and it's unclear like how much Star Trek is in the future for Paramount Plus, but I'm actually pretty optimistic and I'm very happy that this thing that could have gone you don't want to have happen what happened with Nemesis, which is everybody's like, that's it. That's the last we'll see of them after something like All Good Things that everybody loved. And I think that in the end, there was a lot of danger there, and I'm glad that we all ended up, I think, in a pretty good place. It's you know, choose your ending. There were 8 of them. Pick one that makes you happy. And
that's right.
But yes, poker. It's all poker.
Yes, I choose
poker.
To be a 10 forward playing poker.
With the gang.
Yes.
Yep.
Our pals.
Well, I don't have any conspiracies.
What?
Because the show is over. I would like to say to everybody out there, on behalf of both of us, thank you for listening to Vulcan Hello. We appreciate it. And we will be back in the middle of June.
June 15th.
Strange New Worlds. Well, we won't be back on June 15th.
Actually, on June 15th. Yeah, did we talk about this?
This is the other announcement here, which is we're not going to watch it the day that it's released and talk about it immediately. We're going to find time to watch it, and then we'll record. So we'll probably be releasing our episodes for Strange New Worlds either over the weekend or on Monday, depending on when, you know, basically depending on whether Scott and I have things to do on the weekend or not.
I'm very unpopular, so I generally don't. But Jason has many things to do.
I mean, occasionally I go somewhere and, you know, do something, but it's the summertime, right? Like my daughter's graduating from college and stuff like that. But generally, yes, we're going to try to do that. But we're not going to be, if you usually listen to us on a Thursday night or a Friday morning, it's going to be a little delayed. And I think in part because we would like time to watch it on our own schedule instead of as homework. Because, you know, I will admit having to watch Star Trek, watching Star Trek is not work, but having to watch it at a very particular time in order to do a podcast kind of makes the thing you love into work. And I don't want to make Star Trek into work like that. So we're going
to
take
it. Talk to me about it.
That's the thing, Scott. If I just wanted to reduce my workload, I'd stop doing Vulcan Hello. But quite frankly, I can't imagine watching Star Trek and then not talking about it with you afterward.
Aw, how sweet.
And for all of the rest of you out there to listen to that. So we will be back in June. There's a trailer out now. We finally have scenes from Strange New Worlds Season 2.
So exciting.
Could not be more ready for it. In an alternate universe where Netflix didn't have a bad quarter and make everybody freak out, Season 2, Episode 1 of Strange New Worlds would have also dropped yesterday. I'm okay with a little bit of a gap between my Star Trek shows.
Yes.
It's fine.
Although, it is funny, I guess, no spoiler. If you don't want to hear spoilers for the trailer, don't listen to this, but it is funny that a similar Captain tagline joke happens in both Picard and that trailer. So
yes, everybody's doing the Captain tagline thing now. Didn't used to be a thing. Now it's a thing.
No, now it's a thing. Kirk didn't have a tagline.
No, he didn't. Just like
in my day.
Warp 8. Get us out of here. All right.
Get us out of here. Speaking of that, thank you, Jason, for talking to me. And we'll be, we hope that you listeners will voyage with us to a strange new world in this summer as we delve into different times to talk about Star Trek and talk about new Star Trek that keeps showing up.
That was like a real Vulcan Hello episode ending, Scott.
I know. It's very unfamiliar territory for me.
It'll never happen again.
Mm-mm. End program.